Welcome to the Sages Among Us. Nevada County has a legacy of rich resources, from farm and timberland to sparkling rivers of water and gold to abundant beauty and recreation. And perhaps what's the greatest treasure in any area? The people who devote great amounts of time and energy toward making their community better for everyone. The Sages Among Us attempts to find out who these people are, why they provide so much service to the community, and how these efforts make a positive difference for all of us. I'm your host, Brian Buckley, and today we're going to get the personal story of a citizen leader committed to service. Justin Gold is the founder of the Nevada County nonprofit organization, the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies. He is also the author of 6 books, including The Currency of Moments. He was interviewed just a while ago on Capital Public Radio regarding a recent service project the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies undertook on behalf of refugees and asylum seekers in Oaxaca, Mexico. Justin, welcome to the Sages Among Us.
Welcome to you, too.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and I've actually been really looking forward to our chat tonight because you've spent years looking into one of the questions that we often ask of our guests, and that's what do you personally get out of your civic engagement? But before we get into that, I just want to talk about the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies for a bit. When did it start, and what's its focus?
Well, originally we got together as an adventure travel group, and this was in Santa Barbara. And we traveled to South America, and we traveled to Asia, and climbed some mountains, and went to some extremely remote places. And you know how it goes. After a certain sequence of repetitions, it becomes becomes boring. And we tripped over the possibility of helping some people, some children in Thailand on a trip there. And it turned out to be so rewarding that it became part of our program. And we formed this nonprofit tax-exempt organization so that we could actually expand and do that in more countries. And so that was in the mid-1980s, and we've been doing that ever since.
So it started focusing on the adventure, but then shifted to more of a focus on service.
It was definitely an I-oriented group. I want, I like, I need, and adventure and excitement and variety. And it turned into a we organization. But the metamorphosis was slow, and it was sometimes challenging and sometimes even painful because there's some sacrifice involved in going to a place and spending your time rather than going around to the exciting places to spend time in more of a giving profile. Mm-hmm. So we learned as we were going. We really had no guidebook to do that. We learned as we were going, and we started to encompass more people who were interested, and that evolved into our coming to Nevada County about 25 years ago and trying to operate from here and do the same thing, which we do.
Sounds like it was a real organic evolution, and maybe that transition from I to we is the reason it's been sustainable for multiple decades now.
I think that's really the only reason that it's sustainable, because we is a very natural phenomenon, and I've found that to be the case. But I wouldn't have professed that as a young person. But I have learned that there is something natural to be uncovered in the we and the taking care of others, in addition to taking care of ourselves. And it comes to a certain point where we have the more than the basic necessities that not all of us have, but many of us have, and that it's time to pass it on. And I don't think that's so much of a discipline, but some natural capacity that can be uncovered. And I think probably the most unique part of our organization is that a good part of our energy is put into removing the obstacles that we have from being those natural giving people. So we have an amount of self-study that's part of it. And that's probably one of the reasons that our organization remains small, because it's not only, a lot of people would like to volunteer, I'd like to give, I'd like to do this, but I'm thinking now of the story, which makes some sense to me about, I don't know where it's from, the Bible or somewhere, that if you give a person a fish, they can eat, if you teach them how to fish like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a direct correlation with my thought that if you uncover a person's ability to give, then they become a natural giver rather than give a person an assignment and they have to do that effort and the stretch and the discomfort of giving, more like that we have that in us and every once in a while it surfaces and we feel it. Mm-hmm. And I've written books about the subject, and I think it's worth pursuing.
Uh-huh. I'm curious about the name, the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies. Can we break that apart a little bit? What's the cultural component and what's the naturalist component?
I can tell you how we came up with it. It was a long time ago. We bought some property in Santa Barbara, and it was our office, and we wanted it to be owned by the by a nonprofit tax exempt. So we did the papers to file for that in the mid-1980s. And then we had, let me go back a little. I was in the restaurant business for years, and I had some successful restaurants in New York City where I grew up. And one time we started a new restaurant, and what I did in order to decide what the menu was going to be as I invited everybody I knew, all my friends, made all the different dishes that I want, and we had a survey. And that survey ended up what was going to be on the menu. So it was similar to the Center of Cultural and Natural Studies words. We got everybody together on what would be a good name, and we had a lottery, and we picked out all the different possibilities. Do we want to include this? Do we want to include that? And that's the name that we came up with, that I actually remember why we came up with it and what it means in relation to or coming up with it. I don't think I do remember.
Yeah. Well, that's a very honest answer and a great story. If you look at the organization now, and you're a founder and you're the chief operating officer, ED of the organization now. If you could rename it to anything, can you think of anything that you feel might be a more accurate or encompassing name for the organization?
How about the School for Servants and Heroes?
All right, School for Service and Heroes.
Servants and Heroes.
Servants and Heroes.
It happens to be the title of my last book.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact title, but it's something like Everybody Wants to Be in the Company of, and then it said School for Servants and Heroes. Maybe bringing forth the naturalness of what it is to be a servant and somebody's hero, mm-hmm. You know, not a hero necessarily like in the movies, but, you know, I'm thinking of the ultimate hero is a third grade teacher. There is no more hero, in my view, than a third-grade teacher. You know, that's the hardest job and really the most significant job. More so, I'm sure you know that as a principal of a school, that your job wasn't as important as a third-grade teacher's was.
Absolutely. Yeah, I considered myself a servant, actually, to the teachers, mm-hmm. and the students. Well, now we get to the part that I've really been interested in talking to you about, and that is, what do we get out of being servants, out of our service? You know, we ask that question a lot. We get a lot of different answers. There tends to be some themes, but this is something that you've really devoted a great deal of time and thought towards, and love to hear your thoughts, mm-hmm. on the concept of what we personally get out of our service to others.
Well, I hope this is an acceptable answer. I have to start with what we get out of not being a giving person, and what we get is being self-consumed, worrying about our problems, plans, and relationships extraordinarily, you know, it becoming the focus of our lives, becoming obsessed with the improvement of our surroundings, redoing our externals. That's extremely burdensome. So that's the contrapositive of why I remember there's a line in a Dylan song, "You ask me why I don't live here, how come you don't move?" And it's I have to start there because there is an idea that there's a burden to responsibility, but really responsibility is a natural place. And when we achieve a natural place, there's relaxation there, because when we don't take responsibility for what's around us, whether it's poverty or people in danger of security or children that are at risk, if we don't take responsibility, maybe not responsibility globally, but you know, it could be very, very, in a very small way, very in our neighbors even. If we don't do that, we're missing something, and we're also not recognizing the natural gift of our ability to notice and respond to what's around us. So the answer for me is very experiential and understandable, because I didn't begin as a giving person. I wasn't necessarily the offspring. I was the offspring of two attorneys, you know, and we know what attorneys are like. Present company excluded, of course, if there are any. So I learned how to take care of me, and I learned how to do all the things that were necessary, learn all the things that were necessary to improve my lot. And at some point I recognized that was severely limiting, because I was only one component of the world, and taking care of just one component is not a natural thing. So what I get and what the people around me get that work with me get is they get to feel the natural gift of being a natural human being. And a natural human being is a giving person. So the burden of everything that has to happen, if you're not natural, you have to in some way perform, or you have to in some way fake it, or you have in some way avoid this treadmill, let's call it, of avoiding looking foolish, mm-hmm. you know, which can be a lifetime burden. Being a natural person, you don't have to really do that, because sometimes
you're
going to look foolish.
Right, right.
Hopefully not right now, though.
So if I could summarize a little bit, it sounds like if you're focusing on yourself, it's going to be a certain amount of artificiality, an empty type of existence where there's a lot of tail chasing. And if you're focusing on others, that actually opens you up and allows you to reach your full potential as a human being. Is that?
I think that's accurate. I mean, I did certainly put in my years at chasing tail, as you describe it. And I think I couldn't give a better explanation than you did, description than you did. It's natural is natural, and it's not a stressful position, although taking responsibility has been taught to us is something to avoid. But I've found that really the opposite is the case. The rewards from taking responsibility are far out shine the gifts.
The sense of agency.
The burden.
Okay. Another question that occurs to me is there a qualitative difference in the kind of service? And as an example, I know that the center, with its origin as adventure travel, does a lot of combining of travel and service projects. and as well as some local. And would you say that's qualitatively different than, say, somebody volunteering to be on the board of a local nonprofit? How would that be the same, and how would it be different?
I think the most substantive difference is the person to person. I think that basically our organization does person to person. We don't do projects that are so sweeping that we don't get in there with the people. We were in Thailand and we built an addition to a clinic there because we have building skills among us, so we did that. But we didn't give the money and watch it happen. We got in there with the people, and we were passing the cement, and we were doing the hammers and nails and working together with the people. And the most rewarding part is the face-to-face and human-to-human interaction with the people that we're dealing with. And part of our the way we discriminate what we're going to do and what we're not going to do is, will we be allowed to get in there and interact with the people? And it doesn't have to be a lot of people. It doesn't have to be a mass project. So I'd say the qualitative difference between all kinds of service is, do you get to be face-to-face with the person you're helping? And if you can, there is a quality to it that's different than anything remote. So it's the same in politics and same in law enforcement. If you get face-to-face with the people you're dealing with, it's going to be different than if you're administering, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a significant difference between helping to build an orphanage and writing a check so that it can be built.
Yes. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Okay. We're fortunate that way because we are funded. We don't have to raise money. We don't solicit money. All our introduction programs and informative programs are free. I mean, this is unique good fortune to be able to do that. So when we solicit people to be interested or we talk to people, everyone by the nature thinks, well, where's the fundraiser coming in? But we don't have to do that. The money is not connected to anything we do. And even the books I write, if somebody wants one and can't afford it, all they have to do is let me know, and I send it to them.
Great, great. You're listening to The Sages Among Us on KVMR. I'm Brian Buckley, and we're talking today with Justin Gold, author of 6 books and the founder of the nonprofit Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies that really focuses more on creating opportunities for people to live in service and how that can actually open up their own lives and potential as human beings. So, Justin, you're clearly blazing or have been blazing your own trail because not that many people start their own nonprofit organizations or author multiple books particularly on the topic of becoming a more full human being. Can you describe your childhood and where it all started for you?
Well, I grew up in New York City, and certainly I was not alien to the psychology of being somebody who grew up in New York City. I was born in the Bronx and moved to Manhattan and lived a good many years in Manhattan and was involved with money dealings and became a financial consultant and owned some businesses and learned how to excel and learned how to compete. And learn how to work the angles that are necessary to be successful in those kind of things. And eventually, I somewhat tired of the repetition of that, but not to the point that I was a rejuvenated person or a renovated person. But I did meet people that had different perspective. And I found their perspective interesting, although not so much that I was going to adopt their perspective, but it did seem to grow on me. Mm-hmm. And from that point, my life started to take a very slow turn. There were no U-turns in my life, a very slow veering off to a more humanitarian attitude. And as I said, that humanitarian attitude didn't lead me to necessarily be a social worker, but it did lead me to traveling more, to seeing the conditions around the world through adventure travel. And then as it evolved into doing things for other people, but certainly not grew up with that influence.
Right, right. Well, you said that there was a long, slow turn, nothing approximating 180 or even 90 degrees. But can you think of, as you look back, any kind of a watershed event that, you know, was really important in either shaping the person that you've become or in the direction that your life has taken since that moment?
Well, I can tell a story that I've told before, which is something I avoid doing. I try on one of my books, it says on the top, a cliche-free zone. I like to think that I've talked a lot publicly, and actually this last book is a compilation of public talks that I've given for 30 years. It's a big book. And so I've talked a lot, and I try not to repeat myself, and I don't tell stories from the Bible, and I try to talk about my personal experience. And one of the stories in one of my books, I think I've written it, is I was traveling, and I was traveling through an Islamic country, and I've done a lot of traveling through Islamic countries, and I was in Iran, and this was before the changeover, mm-hmm. where Americans weren't really welcome there. And I was traveling looking for beautiful buildings and exciting things and beautiful women and the things that young men look at. And I wasn't really familiar with the Islamic religious tradition as much as I was liking the mountains and the nature there. And I found myself in a city called Isfahan, and I was walking around the square, and the call to prayer happened. And within 30 seconds, I was standing in the middle of probably 15,000 people that were all praying. And I was standing in the middle, and I described it like a candle in the middle of a birthday cake. And there were no exit aisles. So I was standing there looking at these people, and what were my options? You know, I'm not a religious person. I grew up with around a lot of religion, but I really never adopted it. So I was standing there, and what could I do? So I went down and did what they were doing, and which would have been the antithesis of anything that I would seek to do as a proud New York young man. And I got down there, and I loved it. I loved the feeling of being invisible in this crowd of people when all my life I had tried to become visible. And that was very meaningful for me. And even the fact that I can repeat it and remember it now means it must have been significant for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Good story. We don't have a great deal of time. We have about 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, what's next for the Center for Cultural and Naturalist Studies? What's
I know this isn't TV, but I brought a prop.
Yes, a peacock puppet.
Yeah, a peacock puppet, a very beautiful one, actually. And what we've done, we started about 10 years ago in our projects around wherever we've gone, and we brought these puppets because the kids love them. And a lot of times we're dealing with kids that are at risk for different reasons, refugees, and just came back from Mexico and did the puppets, and we deliver some of our messages using the puppets. And I had no history with puppets, but the minute I saw them, and this company in the Bay Area, Folk Manus, who makes these very expensive, lavish puppets, donated all these puppets when they heard what we were doing, and so we had to do something with them, so we learned to do the puppets. And so that's what we've been doing. And our last program, we did a program with the puppets and did our showed our videos from all over and did a little skit with a rap song about blame and learning to not blame and things like that. So the future is we've been not traveling extensively because of COVID, but now we just did our first trip down to the border wall in Oaxaca, Mexico, and saw, really, it got real for us, and it hadn't been before.
Mm-hmm. So did I understand you've got some event coming up in Sacramento also?
Yes, we actually had an event here in Grass Valley last week, and really well attended and beautiful, and the newspaper came in and covered it and took pictures.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yes, it was really nice. And people stayed after, and we try to do our events really differently. We set the lamps, and we make it into a big room, and a nice homey room, and we bring in the puppets, and we talk, and we show the pictures, and we have this in Sacramento. It's a ways to drive from here, and I don't know if people would do that, but you're certainly welcome, and all our events are free, and you can get to meet the people that are doing this, because we all try to show up at all the events that we do. And if you're interested in getting to know more about what we do, you're welcome to come by.
Okay. You know, you started this program in Santa Barbara, and then you ended up coming to Nevada County with it. Is there a story behind that move?
Well, I lived in Oregon for 7 years. And in Oregon, I really got decitified, and it was infectious, and it was real, and that's what I wanted to do. And then a book I was writing caused me to spend some time in Santa Barbara researching, and I knew I was going to get back out into the country, into the woods, and we ended up buying this acreage out in Nevada County and on the ridge, it was very simple. It was a matter of getting out into some beautiful country, which this certainly is. And I want to add this one thing. My name is Justin Gold, but I go by, on all my books, by the name of initial J, J-A-Y-E, Gold, J.J. Gold. And I do that because there is a Justin Gold who is well known, and he is a peanut butter king. And I figured it would be best to let him do the peanut butter and I do what I do. So I use my middle name and my first initial.
All right. You know, obviously your organization works with people and you're trying to help them reach their potential as well as helping them serve others. What advice do you have for people who might be interested in life of service or curious about the connection between service, engagement, and a healthy life?
Yeah, I think that it's really very simple, and I think I've never said it before, but when I had my interview on CAP Radio, it just jumped out of my mouth. The next time you buy a Subway, instead of getting a 6-inch, get a foot long and give the other 6-inch away to somebody who looks hungry.
That sounds like a great bit of advice. Well, Justin, thank you so much for being my guest tonight. The half hour has gone very quickly, and I appreciate all you're doing.
Okay, it was good to be here.
The purpose of this program is to inspire and invite people to participate in the betterment of their community. Discover how others are making a difference and how you, too, can be part of the positive in this region by tuning into The Sages Among Us on Wednesday evenings at 6:30. Next week's guest is Chad Wingo, publisher of the Union newspaper, interviewed by Holly Grimaldi Flores. I'm Brian Buckley, and you've been listening to The Sages Among Us on KVMR. I'd like to offer my warm appreciation to Justin Gold for sharing his story this evening. And finally, thank you for joining us this past half hour, and thanks for everything you do to make your part of the world a little bit better.